This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory,
oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisited us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already, it's Levin Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I have no clue what it is that you do at 11 o'clock, but whatever it is you do, do. I'm happy that you do that do and that you do that do with me. So today is a historical day. That is a quote from the chief magistrate of the Circuit Magistrates Court of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And she pointed out in her speech that never before have we seen this many magistrates, or in her recollection, this many magistrates sworn in at the same time, but that there is an expedient need for magistrates with the resignation of some two magistrates, the ascension of some two magistrates, and I don't remember what happened to the fifth one, but that then created five vacancies for magistrates in the magistrate or the lower courts. In a couple of days, I think there will be some justices of the Supreme Court sworn in. And let me say now that this show, they usually play the disclaimer before, but let me say that this show is largely based on some thoughts that I have had over the weekend with regards to judiciary appointments, rather. And it stems from the fact that just about over a week ago, there was a ruling by Her Learned Lordship, or Her Learned Ladyship, rather, Cheryl Thompson, who ruled to kind of stay an injunction against the government with regards to the demolition of structures in Abaco. And we know that she's now increased the jurisdiction to include all of Abaco and not just the Mud and Pigeon Pea. I imagine that the judge had calculated many things in her estimation as a judge. Again, the chief magistrate this morning said that when one accepts this call to public service, you must be able to divorce yourself of your personal belief and rule in accordance with the law. And it troubles me that none less than a deputy prime minister, none less than a senior politician, actually one of the more senior in the cabinet, both in position and in time. He's actually been, this is going to be now his second trench of time as a cabinet minister, would create such a gray cloud of doubt and uncertainty, particularly surrounding the judiciary, right? I think, again, the chief magistrate said this morning, or not the chief magistrate, it was the registrar that said this morning, that good societies are built on the conduct of the judiciary and its ability to dispose of its duties. And I don't think that Deputy Prime Minister took into consideration the damage that he would have done. I'll tell you why. As I move in and around the inner city communities, you know, while I am rescuing baby kittens that find themselves in distress, and while I am about doing my ambassadorial duties as the ambassador for local community watering holes, let me send a special shout out to Lil Sam. I hear the chatter. I hear the clamor. I hear the clutter. And I'll tell you what has become the general consensus in and on the ground in the inner city communities where I frequent. People are now beginning to say, oh, Desmond Bannister is right. And that Ms. Sheryl Thompson only ruled like that because it's almost an election time. Ms. Sheryl Thompson ruled like that because she wanted to stick it to this administration. And I checked both the appointment criteria for the magistrate's court. I also checked the appointment for the Supreme Court. And the law, one is the Constitution, the other is the Magistrates Act, really gives no clear list of criteria as to what ought to in fact be a judge's ability or capability. It simply speaks to, and I have it right here so I can read it. It simply speaks to there being the appointments made in the case of a judge sent to the JLSC. The JLSC then adjudicates it the way they do it, and the appointments are then forwarded on to the Governor General for his approval. In the case of magistrates, you know, the process is quite similar. As a matter of fact, the magistrate courts actually say that there must be none less than a 5-year requirement to accept the position. But I don't see any particular qualification outside of the need to be called to the bar. All right? And let us not be coy. Administration after administration have put in place judges that they felt were most in line with the administration's philosophy, most in line with the administration's ideology, most in line with the administration's thinking. But that's not, again, something that finds itself with any level of specificity, if you will, to the goings-on of Bahamian politics and Bahamian governance. You recall that Mr. Trump, in his last days in office as a president of the most powerful country on the planet, had called into question his appointment to the Supreme Court bench. And so what I try to get the people to understand as I move throughout the inner city Nassau, and I have a guest, he's on the line with me, as I move throughout inner city Nassau, is that even if your position is that the Honorable Madam Justice Sheryl Thompson did not rule in accordance with the law, and that she somehow was unable to bathe herself clean of a bias and wanted to, air quotations, stick it to the administration, the judge must be minded or mindful that the way the Westminster system is designed, power is something that is consensual, and the prime minister is the prime minister because all other ministers have consented to it. The opposition leader is the opposition leader because all other members of the opposition have consented to it. And what can easily happen, although it's not ever been seen in my lifetime, but as we have seen in the case of Brexit several times in London, is the person that was the leader of the opposition can become the prime minister tomorrow morning. We see the same thing happening now in Israel with President Netanyahu. What his name is? Netanyahu. You know what his name is. And what it means is, if a judge makes a ruling, and again, it is vomit worthy, one, to hear a deputy prime minister, two, to hear somebody with more than 20 years called to the bar attack the judiciary in such a fashion. But in every administration, there will be judges. Needless to say, the appointment of the judges today are probably one of the most scrutinized lists of people I've ever heard in my life's history of judges being called to the bench. People have said all sorts of things regarding this new list of appointments. Many of them, if you draw lines with pencils, it is very easy to find that they have an affinity to or a nexus with some direct correlation to this administration. The question then becomes, when their learned lordships or their worships now ascend, are we saying that we cannot rely on them to rule against the fallacy of their administration? When their learned lordships and their worships ascend, are we saying then that we anticipate that they will, with jaded eyes, look more toward the red than the yellow because that is the administration with which they have gained their ascension. Because I imagine that what is good for the goose must be good for the gander. And if you're saying to me that because someone has had an affiliation with a party in the past, but has now ascended to her ladyship status, that she is somehow incapable, ill-capable of cleansing herself, then I ask you as a Bahamian to consider this. What do we do to ensure that we have a functioning judiciary? Because it would then subtly mean to me that Bahamians are quite ready to have foreign judges return. And if you're ready to have foreign judges return, then I beg the question, does that also mean you want a foreign police commissioner? Does that also mean you want a foreign commander of the defense force? And I mean, if that is the direction we're going to go in, then I say let's crank Rule Britannia, play it from Mount Fitzwilliam, and allow the royal governors to come back. But that's just leaving. I've brought somebody that is a bit more learned than I am. Fain Thompson joins me on the line this morning. Fain, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining me. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you are a man trained in the law. I think you've heard my opening salvo. Mm-hmm. I think you've seen what happened this morning. I don't know if you've seen the ceremony that recently just ended. Mm-hmm. And the chief magistrate says these are historical times. Usually we would have these appointments down at the administration building, notwithstanding that due to the COVID protocol and the COVID era that we now live in, not only is that historical, but we are now swearing in magistrates in the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. It's unheard of. She says never in her mind's recollection can she recall so many magistrates being sworn in all at once. Mm-hmm. So that in itself was historical for her. But if you've heard my salvo, it is easy to set or to nestle those called into a category that is different from the one that they have attached, the public that is, have attached to her ladyship over at the Supreme Court. And my question to you, Fain Thompson, is as somebody that has practiced the law, as somebody that has executed the law, as somebody that has been a judge, do you think the Bahamian society is well within their right to have the concerns that we hear now as a consequence of the Deputy Prime Minister's statements in the news a week ago?
I think the Deputy... first, let me say good morning, Bahamas, and Levon, thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. I think that the Deputy Prime Minister's words were unfortunate. I think that I understand his right to say it. He represents the executive. He's now commenting on something which happened. As part of the judiciary, there is a separation of powers. I respect his opinion. I disagree with it. Mm-hmm. I do not see anything untoward in what Justice Thompson did. And she has no relation to mine, to me. She's not even married to a cousin. She just happens to be a Mrs. Thompson. Uh-huh. But she made a decision which people disagree with. I think for reasons which have nothing to do with the rule of law. It has to do with that pervasive sentiment in this country that the area over which or in which or for which she ruled is something that most Bahamians have a very passionate view of.
Right.
I see nothing wrong with the decision that she made. That's a personal opinion. I've read part of it. In fact, I have the entire judgment, and I don't want to refer to it because I understand it has not been perfected,
right,
which means that it has been there's one or two pages which still have to be perfected.
Okay.
So, but I will tell you that her reasoning is simple. She was concerned to maintain the status quo so that outside the area of where the injunction was limited, was initially enforced, there would be no extension of government's activities in terms of bulldozing certain homes. I see absolutely nothing wrong with the Deputy Prime Minister's right to disagree, and I see absolutely nothing wrong with the judge's ruling. I think the two are equally can be mutually inclusive. That's the way a democracy works. The majoritarian principle does only applies when you go to elections. Mm. Judges don't vote on the basis of the sentiment, the pervasive sentiment of Bahamians vis-a-vis either Bahamian Haitians or Haitians, landed immigrants, or persons who are undocumented. Judges cannot rule on that basis. So if a politician doesn't like it, too bad. Mm. That's the way it is. That's what That's what the rule of law is all about. And in the absence of a rule of law, we will have the minority. We will have the majority. Perhaps a negative opinion expressed by the majority abusing the law and causing for the creeping fascism and totalitarianism that we see in so many parts of the United States. When Trump tried to stack the Supreme Court with so many conservative judges, obviously they didn't uphold his rule of law by not going with his shenanigans to call a fake election and to overturn the election. So I was happy that we had a judge who could disagree with the executive the way Justice Thompson did. It's part of our democracy. Without it, we are done.
But what do you say to the diminishing effect of the statements, right? That then puts, again, and I get this stuff when I go in the inner city, because I believe that that is, you know, the law is interpreted based on a common man's understanding. And I feel like the most common of men live among the inner city of New Providence, right? So when I go throughout the inner city, the general tone that I now hear is, oh, well, you know, the judge had her personal side, or the judge is, and I don't know if that is the society that I want to create, Fane. I also don't know if that is the society that I want Bahamians to accept, that somehow we cannot from among ourselves find Bahamians who are pure enough in their perfection of the law that they wish to live in an ordered society with law and order, so much so that if they were to ascend to judgeship, they cannot, in an impartial way, rule without fear or favor, prejudice or ill will, as they have sworn to before the face of God and before the face of the crown.
I do not, in all honesty, see how that applies here. It is unfortunate that I could not have been. We would not have perhaps a two-hour show, part of which we would read the judgment, part of which we would get someone for the proposition and someone for the other side to see exactly what the meat of a judgment is. I've heard the negative sentiment on the ground, but I understand that it is not born of the understanding of the subtleties of American cyanamide and so forth. The case which is the foundation upon which the decision was established, a 1975, I think, decision of the Privy Council. Mm-hmm. It is not based on that. It is based, the so-called sentiment on the ground, it is based on a pervasive ethno-bigotry which predominates in certain parts of our culture, up and down, not just the working man on the streets, not just the man over the hill, but all over the Bahamas. I am on record. I do not support that. I do not see the sentiments being expressed as being anything but an attack on the judge's character, which is unfortunate. Because she made a decision that she was bound to make. She made a decision that many people disagree with. And so what? Mm. Tough titties. No disrespect intended to the Guardian Radio. Mm. Too bad. Mm. If you don't like the decision, appeal it. And I think that is what's going on. The rule of law does not permit me, should not permit our people to rule that because she ruled in a particular way, and I don't agree with that opinion or the impact of it, something wrong with her. She's corrupt. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that Justice Thompson is even being mentioned in that sense, because I don't think anyone can ever say that she's known to do A, B, or C. Right. It's unfortunate. And what I said, though, stands. The Deputy Prime Minister had a right to pass a comment. Mm-hmm. But he had no more power other than that. He's a member of the executive. He cannot tell a judge what to do and what not to do. Thank God.
How unusual is it, Fane, for administrations, executive branches of governments, to try and do what you suggest that Mr. Trump did, which was stack judges that are aligned with the ideology of the executive? Is that an uncommon thing?
No, it's not an uncommon thing. You're very right to ask the question, because you know the answer to that question. It's a common thing to the extent that a politician seeks to establish some kind of advantage. Mm-hmm. But let me say this. Thank God for the decency, fundamental decency of the judges that he appointed. Mm-hmm. Had Trump gotten his way, because he verbalized everything he wanted them to. He made it very clear to them what he wanted them to do. They all rejected him. Of all the 90-something cases that he brought to overturn the election, they were all rejected. It's the functioning, the beauty of democracy, of liberal democracy. Mm-hmm. One division of government will say to the next government, the next division of government, go and take a hike. You didn't appoint me to be your, I would use a word which rhymes with witch. Mm-hmm. You didn't appoint me to be your witch. You appointed me to be a judge of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. My position obliges me to be impartial, to be fair, and to be fearless. Mm-hmm. I think that must happen. The same applies in the Bahamas. You know, I remember a particular decision back in the day that Tommy Tankless I think, criticized at the time. He may have been deputy prime minister. He may have been a minister. He may have been in the opposition. He may have been in opposition. But I remember that. And I remember my visceral reaction was, Tommy, you should not do that. Tommy Turnquist, mm-hmm. Permit me to use the name Tommy right now. Sure. And then I thought about it, and I said, wait. Tommy is coming from the political wing of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. The judge that he's criticizing is a judge. That's okay in a democracy. That's okay in a democracy. You must know how long to take it. You must know how far to push it. Otherwise, you may undermine the rule of law. For example, the rule of law, you cannot go and say the judge is corrupt.
Right.
You just cannot, and it slips up on the ground that the judge is corrupt. You look at it, you smile, and you walk on. I wouldn't engage in it because it's puerile nonsense. Mm. Suggest that she acted improperly. It's nonsense. Would they have been happier if she simply said, "No, shut down all the, no, just raise all those shanty towns," so supposedly, and the free fall is there. That sentiment is something that she must ignore. She had to take a hard decision. She made it. We should be celebrating her decision. We may disagree with her, but we must be celebrating our decision, because down the line, there'll be another time with another politician, maybe FNM, DNA, PF, whatever, maybe making a decision that we have, again, a minister criticized. That's normal in this country. This is not the first time it has happened. The Darcy Ryan case was one of the first.
Right.
You would not, you were only aware of that history.
I've heard about the AG versus Darcy Ryan.
Absolutely. It caused a storm in the Bama court. I was a child, but it caused a storm in this country for months and for years. And governments wanted to resist in terms of complying with the Privy Council order. I mean, and they were ultimately forced to for many, many years. Mr. Ryan was in a no-man's land. What I'm suggesting to you, what I'm saying to you, is this is nothing new. But we must know how far to take it. We can't go to the point of calling judges corrupt because they disagree with us.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is not to sit down and make you feel happy and to raise a shanty town because you don't like Haitians. Tough, too bad. If you don't like Haitians, that's your problem. Go with your business. This is a democracy. In the absence of that separation of powers, the executive would do as it wishes. In the absence of the separation of powers, I'm going to say it twice, the executive will do as they wish. That is the check on the power of the executive. That is the natural check, and it's an important check.
Mm.
Whether we like her decision or not, we have to support her right to make it and to not impugn her, unless you are Fox, which would otherwise leave that decent woman alone and in the position that she holds and let her do her work.
What about,
let
me segue here just for a short minute.
Sure.
We know that there are three pillars of the governance of this country. That is the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary, right?
Yeah.
So what say you then to people that say that, the speaker must have lost his mind and this is very unspeaker-like conduct? And I want to tell you, I tote no brief or carry no water for Mr. Muldrie. There were times that I thought the man was a stark idiot. I do now, though, believe that the speaker is onto something, right? And so, in the words of one Clifford Scavala, there was obviously method to the madness, right?
Yes.
The speaker now appears to, and although chastised in the budgetary allocation by the executive, which is clearly obvious, you see the speaker saying to the executive, "I am not an extension of the executive. It is my job to ensure that you all do not turn that cabinet office into a boys' club where you all get to be all-knowing and all-powerful, and you come across this court wrangle wielding a big stick. When you come across here with the government's intention, you are still bound to the people's will, and that is why there ought to be more elected members of us than there are appointed members of you."
And let me say that the speaker, I wrote an article around the time that he was vilified in the press as regards the decision he took about the way in which his people were being handled in terms of their shots and so forth, the COVID thing. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote an article supporting the speaker 100%, not 50, not 60, not 70, 100%. Not because his name is Halston Moultrie, but because I understood that for the first time, our constitution, designed to ensure the independence of parliament, this independence in whatever crude way you may want to criticize, it reared its head, it flexed its muscle, it did so.
Mm-hmm.
And it did so, and it survived. The institution survived. As a result of which, those employees were dealt with in a particular way by the executive, which ought to have happened before, and the speaker never should have had to make that complaint. That is the way in which Westminster is designed in our little political experience. That is the way we have designed our Westminster. I publicly supported the speaker's position. I didn't support Halston Moultrie, notwithstanding the fact that he's speaker. I supported what I saw was the first first real flare of independence. Do you know how powerful that is for future instances where that precedent has to be set? Yes. There may be a time when we have a rogue prime minister.
Yes.
A rogue prime minister. And he comes to court with, and he comes to parliament with rogue activity. We want to speak who's prepared to say, I am Chief Justice, I am Prime Minister in this house. Not today, Mr. Prime Minister. It ain't happening.
Right.
We need that because our democracy is young. It is nascent. It is infantile. It needs people like that. I have a friend in Exuma, and she agrees with us. The principal of one of the schools there in Black Point. She agrees that we need. That's just a thought. Some people, it comes to me. We had a conversation, and she agrees fundamentally with me that we need the independence of Parliament, of each institution of government, for the institutions to survive. The U.S. Supreme Court survived Trump's onslaught. Because they couldn't get two deadly squats, but the president thought about them. Mm. And the same applies to Judge Thompson, and the same applies to the Speaker. Whether you like the Speaker or not, his rudimentary, you may say his rough, you may say his inexact way in which he went about what he did was absolutely correct, though you don't like the result. Though many people, like my good cousin on Facebook, he did not like the way in which it went about. The fact of the matter is, we live in a nascent democracy. These institutions are flexing their muscle. We need a speaker who's prepared to say to a rogue prime minister or a rogue minister, don't you dare. Not in my house. Mm. Don't you dare. We need that. And like, as I said, he is the Supreme Court judge in the Supreme in Parliament. He's also the Chief Justice. You cannot... Once he acts constitutionally, within the boundaries of his constitutional remit, I think that these minuscule attempts at trying to enforce institutional independence are good for our democracy. Mm.
Now, you sat at the magistrate's level, Fane, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
How long was that?
4 years in total, almost five years.
How long ago was it?
In the mid-90s.
About how long were you called?
25, 30 years.
Before becoming a magistrate?
No. I think the magistrate court now requires this at 5 years, but there have been instances where persons have been appointed before the 5 year period.
And I think that there is one of the other things that people have taken a bit of, you know, umbrage with outside these studios, outside of the courts, is that, you know, are we getting people that are polished enough, that have been buffed enough, that have had enough, that has practiced or has witnessed enough legal gymnastics. People that
like the legal gymnastics, I like that.
Yeah, people that have not only their hands firmly around litigation and the law, but who also have their hands around templement and deportment, because a judge, while he or she sits in the seat of power, he or she must understand that justice must be tempered, right?
Absolutely.
And temperance comes with a bit of maturity.
Absolutely. Experience, you're right.
Do you believe then we do the bench a disservice, and I know the access, because I have it right here before me, it says in Section 13 of the Magistrate Act, that the Governor General, acting in accordance with the advice of the Judicial and Legal Service Commission, may appoint stipendary and circuit magistrates who shall hold office during pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
No person shall be appointed stipendary or circuit magistrate unless he is a member of at least 5 years standing at the English, Irish, Scottish, or Bahamian bar, or of the bar of any other country of the Commonwealth with which a member of the Bahamas bar is admitted without examination.
Mm-hmm.
He has been enrolled and has practiced for at least 5 years as a solicitor in the English, Ireland, or Scotland, or in any other country of the Commonwealth in which the member of the Bahamas Bar is permitted to practice as a solicitor without examination. Any person appointed to be a stipendary and circuit court magistrate shall be ex officio a magistrate for the whole of the Bahamas and shall have in each and every district all the powers, authorities, jurisdictions, rights, privileges, duties, liabilities conferred or imposed upon a magistrate by any law, but may be assigned by the chief magistrate to a particular district or districts and may be transferred by the chief magistrate from one district to another. Notwithstanding any such assignment, a stipendary and circuit magistrate so assigned may exercise jurisdiction in any other district or districts. So literally, the only qualification to be called to the magistrate's bench technically, if we go by the law, is to have been called or to have practiced for 5 years.
Yes, that's correct.
Do you believe, though, when... Do you believe that that when we allow those called so close to the mark, we may do a judicious injustice in that while they may be learned in the law, they may still need a lesson in temperance and deportment. They may still need...
I get you.
They may still need... Because judgeship is a powerful thing. I imagine you've experienced it.
Yes,
men, the will of men hang on the utterances of the court's lips.
Absolutely.
And so we have to make sure, and I think this is a sentiment that I hear when I walk about, we have to make sure that when we put people on the bench, not only are they people that got A in the law classroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be people that have lived and exercised judicious behavior among us. They have to be people that have a good common grasp of what the temperature, what is the socially accepted, what is the common understanding of the people that live among us. And we must see that displayed in the court. And I think people are fearful or people are concerned, particularly since the new magistrates are all very, very young. They're concerned about whether or not that is something.
Well, you say they're very young. You say they're very young. The number of names there of persons who I feel at least have, I know for a fact, have at least 5 years of experience.
No, they all have 5 years. There's no question there. But I'm saying, like, is that something, as someone that has sat on the bench, is that something that you imagine the public ought to be concerned about?
I have to make a declaration. The declaration is this. I was called very soon. After I was called to the bar, I ended up on the bench fairly quickly. I'm not going to say that I waited. I'm not going to say that the powers that be are determined to wait until a certain time for me to be appointed as a magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I went on to do a fairly decent job, not just in Nassau, but also in Grand Bahama.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see experience as really being determined by a time frame. I see experience as being determined by the amount of time you spend in court.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think that I had the opportunity of working at the feet of some of the best legal minds in the country, and I'll call some names. Burton Hall, Burton Hall. Burton, I think, was really one of the best inspirations that anybody could have. Once I ended up in the AG's office, before I became a magistrate, I went in the deep end. They literally said, you have 6 months, fame. Get prepared. And we need our people. At the same time in the Bahamas, the five-year period was not something that we waited for.
Mm-hmm.
There were dispensations which were made, I think, properly and lawfully so. And persons went on the bench before 5 years passage.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the law. I don't know how that particular provision is dealt with nowadays. But I know there was a time in the Bahamas that we could not wait to get trained persons on the bench because essentially there were no Bahamians.
Mm.
Every bench or every particular position was dominated by a Trinidadian, a Guyanese, or a Bajan. And I do not know. But that does not mean that we mustn't comply with the law. The law says 5 years, and that's a hard and fast rule. Then that ought to be applied. I leave that right there.
Do you imagine that it creates concern in our courts and the way they dispose of their matters?
No, you know, I think you should be able to determine. I'm just going to call the name of a lawyer who I know, whose name has been mentioned. I think he's either going on the bench or he's becoming a magistrate. Neil Braithwaite.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Braithwaite, I know from his work in the Attorney General's office. I hope I get the right person.
Yes. Mr. Braithwaite, yeah.
I know that he's an experienced litigator.
Mm-hmm.
So his appointment, I hope I'm getting it right, his appointment, he has that experience, both supreme, I think, and magistrate
right.
court to handle the criminal side to the criminal. A specialization has set in to some extent, even in some of these appointments. Certain people are being appointed because they have a certain strength in certain areas.
Right.
For example, Camille Gomez to the Supreme Court.
Right.
I think that was an excellent choice.
I agree with that. Yeah.
She has a wide experience, especially in civil litigation and commercial matters. I think she'll make an excellent judge. So I would be the last person to criticize persons and their so-called youthfulness, because youthfulness does not mean that you don't have the ability, neither do you have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time, and I will tell you that hundreds of cases I have either been taken part in, prosecuted, or presided over. Hundreds,
mm-hmm.
hundreds. Now, murder trials, at least 50. So what I'm trying to say to you is, it's not an open shut case. Age of the person being appointed. It's not an open shut case. I think it should turn more on experience and their character.
I don't disagree with you, Fionn, but you sit now as a man that has been called to the bar over 25 years, There are some things you understand about the law today that you didn't understand the way that you did when you actually sat on the bench. And so that is the vein in which I take this conversation. Because what I'm suggesting to you, what I'm suggesting has been suggested to me, is sometimes, sure, the law calls for 5 years. Sure, you speak of a time when it was expedient to do otherwise, right?
Yeah.
We saw it within all arms of Bahamian services, whether it was the Defense Force. I mean, they walk fellas through the door, and 2 weeks later, they was lieutenant commanders, right?
Exactly.
We bring boys on the air badly.
You know.
And 1 week later, we send them to Dartmouth, and 6 months later, we come back and get them a boat.
Yeah.
With people,
yeah.
Children on it, right?
Yeah.
I understand the experience of the development of a democracy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I believe we are slightly removed from today from where we were then.
That is true.
The question then becomes, as our democracy matures,
mm-hmm.
Do we not expect, anticipate, hope, wish to see that
mm-hmm.
particularly in our circuit court, which is according, mm-hmm. which according to the chief magistrate this morning, is sometimes all the face of justice the common man will ever see. Many
mm-hmm.
of them will never go beyond mm-hmm. the magistrate's court, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Should we not ensure that it is at that level because they deal with such a magnitude of the Bahamian population that those are in fact people that are polished enough, experienced enough,
mm-hmm.
well-read enough, of
mm-hmm.
course, know the law,
mm-hmm.
but also have lived enough time in the law, practicing
mm-hmm.
the law, to have gained
mm-hmm.
the kind of temperament necessary to be not just fair but
mm-hmm.
and firm, sure, but
mm-hmm.
to also be, again, temperate and compassionate, which is also something else the law requires.
My short answer to you is yes. Everything you just said, ditto, yes.
Mm.
So if 5 years is that artificial measure, then I think that's a good standard.
Mm.
But I am telling you that we have some very, very gifted people around this town. But if the law says 5 years, then of course, fine. There was a time, as you know, not grandfathered, and we quickly moved into move people in certain places because, as you say, it was a new and it was a growing democracy. It needed its various institutions to be peopled, populated by
right.
by Bahamians. And there was a time we went through when certain, I don't want to use a particular word, when certain dispensations were made to achieve that objective. But we have a bench now which is largely Bahamian, in fact, completely Bahamian at most levels. And we've done a good job in building a judiciary that works and that functions. I think basically there should have been more appointments being made, especially the magistrate court level. Let me say something real quick to you. With my experience having been hired, I will tell you that the magistrate in this country is the busiest judge in the country,
mm-hmm.
bar none, the magistrate. That includes Supreme Court judges. That includes Court of Appeal judges. That includes Privy Councillors. The busiest judge in the Bahamian judicial system is a magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I will tell you this because I know what it's all about. Basically, they work from the time they sit until the time they get up, they're working.
Right.
And they still have to work sometimes during lunch and after hours because they have to sign off on warrants, they have to sign off on other matters which are in chambers. So I'm going to say to them, that those who were appointed and those who have gone through that system, that they're the best prepared to ascend to the higher levels of the bench.
Mm.
And I congratulate all of them who have ascended. They're the best prepared, the best.
Finn, I got to take a break.
Huh?
I got to take a break. Hold the line for me. My music is playing. If you're listening to me, Finn Thompson is joining me. I'm Levin Miller. I'm Unleashed on your radio. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Don't move. I've got more show right after the break.
We will be sure.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day.
Welcome back. I want to read for you what exactly the... Fane, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
I want to read for you what the Constitution actually says with regards to the appointment of justices of the Supreme Court. It says the Chief Justice shall be appointed by the Governor General by instrument under public seal on the recommendation of the Prime Minister after consultation with the Leader of the Opposition. The other justices of the Supreme Court shall be appointed by the Governor General by instrument under the public seal acting on the advice of the Judicial Legal Service Commission. The qualifications for the appointment of a justice of the Supreme Court shall be such as may be prescribed by any law for the time being in force. That's not pure, simple English. I don't really know what that means. But it goes on to say, provided that a person who has been appointed as a justice of the Supreme Court may continue in office, notwithstanding any subsequent variations in the qualifications so prescribed. If the office of Chief Justice is vacant, or if the Chief Justice is for any reason unable to perform the functions of his office, then until a person has been appointed to that office and assume its functions, or as the case may be, until the Chief Justice has resumed those functions, they shall be performed by such other person qualified under paragraph 3 of Article 94 of the Constitution for appointment as a justice, as the Governor General, acting in accordance with the advice of the Prime Minister, may appoint for the purpose by instrument under public seal. So again, you see, Fane, there is no clear laid out thing for how we go about appointing judges. Apparently, you send their names to the JLSC. The JLSC does whatever vetting process that they do. But the law in itself doesn't give criteria that is so specific that I, Levin Miller, or you, Fane Thompson, could go and say, well, the man didn't have two shoelaces in each one of his shoe, and as a consequence, the law says that he ought to have it, and so we can't put him on the bench. The point I'm making is, What we all must collectively do, and that is the judiciary, the executive, the legislator, but more importantly, the population, is we must find a way to have confidence in our ability to govern ourselves. This is what we fought for in 1973. I mean, after all, this is what all of the throwing the mace out of the window was about. This is what every single thing from the Burma Road riot to the women's suffrage movement and every other movement that we've had, the taxi union strike, every single movement that we've had from the 50s to today have all been in a sojourn towards us being able to, as a nucleus, govern ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we then make these scathing remarks that create these clouds of suspicion over places like a Supreme Court, right? You know, I don't think it's a good flavor for our democracy. I think it is something that challenges the mind of the population with regards to its faith in a system. And I think that is something that publicly people should decry.
I think, Levon, your concern is whether or not the comments of the governor, of the deputy prime minister may have had a, let me use one word, deleterious effect or impact upon the respect, upon the respect for the rule of law in this country.
Right.
Let me answer you very, very cautiously, because both people I know extremely well. I also understand the difficult jobs they have. But fundamentally, I understand the separation of powers in this country.
Mm-hmm.
The deputy prime minister is a member of the executive. The judge involved is a member of the judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
That comment will take place between the two. It's fine. Judges don't ordinarily publicly comment on things they do.
Right.
But politicians are allowed to do that. Once the deputy prime minister's comments were measured and not designed to undermine the rule of law, I see nothing wrong with what he said.
Mm.
I think he said he disagreed with it and he's going to appeal it.
No, he actually said that it wasn't worth the paper that it's written on and that it sounded silly.
Okay. And I wouldn't go as far as that if I was a deputy prime minister, but he did. But to the extent that his words, in my view, skirt closely to being, well, definitely disrespectful, I do not know that they get as far as contributing to undermining a respect for the rule of law in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Trump actually wants to suggest that certain judges, just by way of example, I don't want to talk about the American experience,
mm-hmm.
that these judges were corrupt. Use that word.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the word corrupt is used in relationship to what Judge Thompson did, then I think you have broken decency and all good form.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have that evidence or that fact, you ought not allow that word to escape your lips.
Sure.
And in certain matters are sub judice. Certain matters are before the court. and you don't want them to be brought into disrepute, or the judge conducting her affairs to be brought into disrepute, so you want to know how far to go. Again, I see nothing wrong with how far he went. I don't think he crossed the Rubicon. I don't think he crossed the line.
The last time somebody found themselves that I can recall, Finn, in contempt of court for having made utterances, it was some other talk show host in another place who, when I checked the story, simply said that if the judge did not rule in the matter correctly, that he would tell people what he knew about the judge. I mean, that was a vacuous statement. I see that statement as far more vacuous than the one made by the Deputy Prime Minister. So because technically, he didn't tell the judge how to rule. Uh-huh. All he said was, I know, of course it was then Justice Stephen Isaacs. I know Stephen Isaacs well. Mm-hmm. And in this instance, regarding this person, he had better rule correctly. He says, because I've known him a long time and he don't want me to tell people what I know about him.
Although suggestive,
you cannot say that in any way impugned the character of the judge. Yet he was called into contempt.
Well, you know what? Contempt is a very funny kind of thing, my brother. You have to know how far to go.
I think to say that the judge's ruling isn't worth the paper it was written on.
I don't see that as being violative of any right to speak and to comment on the judge's decision, except you have to know how far to go if you'd gone further. And I think it's and use language. The judge better not try that again. Then we have a big problem.
Mm.
We have a huge problem, first and foremost, because what does that mean? And what message are you sending? Are you threatening the court? Are you trying to undermine the court and its deliberation?
Mm.
That is different from saying, well, I don't believe that really what anything she said made any sense.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's why I said initially, the two positions by the judge, her decision, in my mind, was correct. And his comment was palatable. I see them as being mutually inclusive in a vibrant and a robust democracy.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? I don't see anything which is violative of a standard of decency or violative of the rule of law. The rule of law is what we're talking about right now, you know.
Mm.
Because if you say that the judge is a prostitute, or if you say that the deputy prime minister is a gangster, you've crossed the line.
Mm.
You've crossed the line, and you have to you must either come to court with truth, or suffer perhaps a criminal libel is something I do not like. I inveil against it all the time.
Yeah, I think it is ridiculous as well.
But we have created a species of law called criminal libel. So you have to be careful how far democracy. Yes, you have a right to freedom of expression, but you don't have a right to impugn someone's character.
What about the polarization of the bench, Finn? Again, we've said earlier in this conversation that there have been any number of administrations all the world over that have aligned themselves with judges of the Supreme Court, particularly that are either conservative or liberal. I mean, it is not uncommon to see judges, even in the UK, described as a more liberal judge or a more conservative judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which lets you know their political leaning.
But I disagree. I disagree that an association of that judge of that judge as being liberal or conservative by the media is something that you should be very suspicious of. Remember now, the media has an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give an example. Fox News has a clear agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be fair. MSNBC has a clear agenda. Now, do we have a Fox News and an NBC in Nassau and the Bahamas? Some say we do, some say we don't.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm suggesting to you is be very careful who the commentator is.
Mm-hmm.
Be very careful about their agenda. I've seen PLP appointees make very independent decisions with the F&M prime ministers in the seat.
Right.
I've seen, and vice versa.
And that is so what it ought to be.
You know, my experience is that judges basically don't give two deadly squats what
right.
you think of them. Generally
right.
speaking, once they have security of tenure. Now, there was a time when they didn't have security of tenure. They came and they worked on, there was a work permit.
Right.
At that time, there was some allegation of abuse, in particular with Darcy Ryan.
Right.
But beyond that point, I think it improved. I think our institution, which is the judiciary, has become more feisty. More independent, for example, I'll give you real quick. A decision by Justice Anita Allen many years ago, when she indicated the unconstitutionality of the so-called dangerous drugs legislation. I think it was either mandatory minimum sentencing, and she went on to say how it was. I remember what this was now. It was the so-called telling magistrates how to determine sentencing in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
She went against the government and overturned and made a decision which to this day still stands. And I thought it was brave. I thought it was powerful. I thought it was correct.
Mm-hmm.
We must have more and more and more of that. Because she was vilified by some for saying, she was soft. Are we going to say she was soft because someone in the Tribune said she was soft? I think not. Or someone in the Guardian said she was soft? I think not.
Mm-hmm.
You should ignore that. We have to sift through all the crap. We have to sift through it all. It's not mm-hmm. easy. We have to sift through it all. Sheryl Thompson has been known to be Sheryl Thompson. She has a very independent flair.
Mm-hmm.
This is nothing new. And in any case, it chances it won't be the last time. It's nothing new. Judge Hilton made a decision in the Gene Roney case,
mm-hmm.
which was nothing new.
Right.
But it was considered to be, again, controversial. Why? Because the independence of the judge, when they rule in favor of the law, and certain people in the country don't like it, they start their mouthpieces gap-seeding. And then once their mouthpieces start gap-seeding, oh, that person is conservative, oh, that person is the PMP, oh, that person is the FNF. Mm-hmm. Foolishness.
But even if they, but the point I'm trying to make to you, Fiend, is even if she bathed in yellow pinked in the mornings before she leave home, mm-hmm. right? We ought to assume that the minute she ascends, the minute the court sentry raps on the door and asks the judge to stand, or asks the court to stand rather, for
all
the
right.
entrance
yes,
of her ladyship.
Right. Yes.
No
yes.
matter what she thought before she got in that room. When she sits there, the only thing that ought to be before her is the law. And that ought to be the case, whether she's a PLP appointee, whether she's an FNM appointee. I don't care who appoint her. The minute the country accepts that this woman is capable enough of adjudicating matters to the point that we want to put her in the Supreme Court, we collectively, it is like they say, the only thing that stops you from dying on a highway is white paint and an agreement that neither of you will cross it. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so in this instance, once this woman, man, person, ascends to the bench,
mm-hmm.
we collectively as a society
mm-hmm.
agree that we will listen to what this person say because we have accepted that this person is capable enough of not having the biases that a Levin Miller will have, not having
mm-hmm.
the biases that a Fiyan Thompson would have. This
mm-hmm.
person is sober enough in their mind, regardless to who their mummy is, regardless to what their mummy or daddy was before. I don't care that his mummy is a Supreme Court justice appointed by the FNM. I don't care that his daddy is a former cabinet minister in the FNM. I don't care. I imagine that if an FNM politician stands before him, afoul of the law, he will adjudicate the matter in the way justice ought to be done. And
mm-hmm.
I think we ought to, as a society, do everything we can to stitch together that fabric as tightly as possible so that people are able to have that kind of confidence.
Absolutely. Agreed. I've heard the judgment of my learned brother, and I concur. Absolutely. And I think that's the basis upon which we make these decisions in terms of appointment. Ultimately, you know, the Judicial Legal Service Commission is not a corrupt body.
Right.
I don't think they would allow themselves to be manipulated like that. You know, there was a time when suggestions were recommendations for the bench came from the Attorney General's office.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk it straight, even though Carlin and others don't want to talk about it. Recommendations would somehow come from the Attorney General's office and then go to the JLSC. The JLSC would say yes or no, person is appointed.
Mm-hmm.
But that, notwithstanding the method of the appointment, even though they're not prepared to publicly admit it, I think the rigor with which people are vetted, I think the rigor with which people are viewed and observed by the media as they do their work is sufficient to ensure us that our democracy, somewhat today, is still safe. You know what frightened me
mm-hmm.
is that people like Cheryl Thompson,
mm-hmm.
Cheryl Thompson, Anita Allen, names that I've called, and Gregory Hilton in the Jane Roney case, if they had made decisions which were born of social pressure and bigotry.
Right.
And PLP or FNM.
Yeah, that
then
would
I would be afraid. Then I would be preparing my immediate departure from these aisles.
Finn,
because I know that kind of, we have one of the most vibrant little democracies on the planet.
Indeed.
And many times people raise hell about the fact, oh, Cheryl, she shouldn't have done it because I'm Haitians. Blah, 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 blah. If she had the bravery to apply the rule of law, I say amen.
Amen. Finn, we're flat out of time, sir. Good
yeah,
to have you on. I appreciate you so much. You're always a wonderful mind to kind of dig up in. I enjoy your conversation very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you
call.
Very much.
Appreciate that.
All
Thank
right. So I've been online with Fiyan Thompson. Let me knock out a couple of these text messages. I got a minute. It says, gents, consider 5 years because not many want to be judges. So if we make it hard, we may never have any to choose from. Good day, Miller and Thompson. Dale Happy here. Does it matter who says it from what seat he or she says it? Consider we have a culture that a cabinet has authority over the court. So does it raise concern for one perceived to be an authority commenting negatively on the actions of one perceived as a subordinate? Is it appropriate behavior? I don't think the courts are subordinate to anybody, actually. This here says, good morning, excuse me, but I thought this was the Bahamas for Bahamians. We are still living in tents or homeless while these Haitians in Abaco actually have structures up. Where's the land that Bahamians can go and build for free? This is about right and wrong, not about... What does it say? Not about the fact that Haitians are unlawfully coming here, unlawfully building homes, breaking the laws, don't respect COVID laws, spreading disease all over the Bahamas. Good morning, Levin. My 5 cents. Literally, You ain't never read my text, but let's see a bunch of Bahamians try to go to Haiti and build on their land for free. Go back to talking about Cuban attack because this man just is pissing Bahamians off. All right, so Linda Midland would never stand for this crap. This is where we all sit back and let foreigners do whatever they want, stand for nothing, fall for everything. The Bahamas will never be ours because of a bunch of sellout Bahamians like you and your guest. He's probably a hybrid. I'm not a hybrid. Megan Daddy's from Auckland, the other's from Andrews. Last one. Levin Miller, great show, my brother. Your show deserves another hour. The decision makers need to stop slapping up. Anyway, if you want to sponsor Unleash with Levin Miller, if you think it's a great show, give Janet Lees a call at 302-2300 or April Moss and let them tell you how you can be a part of it. That's my time. Don't move. It's Guardian Radio. They've got the news. It's next. Us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we